Pastor Mai, hello and welcome to this episode of Agenda. I'm Ewan Gorn. It was an intimidating place to be, say those who took part in the Eastern Area Plan inquiry. We hear from those who felt they were up against it during the process. A housing development in Moraun has left residents feeling bitter. And is the fracking debate a distraction? All that to come on Agenda, and all change with new faces at Maloo Commissioners, but the new chairman insists there's no lack of experience. The inquiry into the Eastern Area Plan has been described as an intimidating experience by some of those who took part. Members of the public were invited to make their views known on the Cabinet Office proposals for land use across the most populated part of the island. Despite being billed as inquisitorial rather than adversarial, some described the cross-examination by barristers as uncomfortable. Both developers and the government employed top UK legal professionals to advance their cases, with QC John Barrett being paid £200 an hour to represent the Cabinet Office. That inquiry closed earlier this month. I spoke to members of the public, Ellery Young and John Kermode, who witnessed proceedings.
I thought it was quite unfair because you ended up with government-employed barrister aligning with two barristers employed by developers who are putting a lot of money behind this in order to try to gain government's agreement to build over greenfield sites. And that really felt quite perverse. We didn't think that government was taking at all an even-handed or fair approach to that, but they were actually pushing their own agenda.
They probably were treated fairly, but I don't think they were treated with respect. It's an inquiry, not a court of law.
Do you think the attitude that you've described put people off from making their points?
I'm sure it did. I'm sure they might have wanted to say more, but if they tried, they were cut off anyway. It was a very intimidating process. I would not have liked to have been in that position myself. I couldn't deal with that, and I've got a lot of respect for the people who stood up to that questioning.
MLC Jane Paul Wilson and MHK Rob Collister felt debating with top barristers was difficult for those without a planning background.
I think they were very experienced, and I think a lot of people have found themselves intimidated. I have to admit I was incredibly nervous, but I had done best part of 60 hours of research. I kept my evidence to fact.
Is this process fair for community groups, members of the public and MHKs?
No. I think the developers of this island, they see an opportunity here to build housing.
I have heard now from a number of members of the public about their sense of inequality of arms about this process. And I've witnessed it. I've watched it. It is very, very difficult. I know myself. I mean, I happen to have a legal background, but it's not in planning law and it's not in development. And there are obviously stacks of documents that have been generated through this process, which for a kickoff, it takes a long, long time to read and process and then to generate your written evidence. And then also to be able to come forward and speak at a public inquiry where people have expert barristers who are able to advance their case and also question the other person's case. That is a huge issue, I think. I'm not sure I have an answer, but I think it is potentially a problem. And I've watched the exchanges of evidence coming out, and you only get a sort of true picture when you've got both sides equally able to challenge each other's evidence and make the case equally as well. And it is very, very difficult for members of the public. Perhaps to have they don't have the resource and perhaps they don't have the expertise, and it's much more difficult. Having said that, some of them I think have been doing really, really brilliant jobs.
Some have described the experience to me as feeling more like they were in a courtroom than an inquiry.
Yeah, and it's the nature of a formal inquiry. So again, I don't criticise the inspector. It's the system that we have set up, but whether it allows people to be heard fully in the way that should really inform the outcome of the area plan is a different question.
MLC Jane Paul Wilson there. The Cabinet Office has stressed its legal representation was acting for the public at large to ensure adequate zoning of land, was not for or against any particular party. While outside the area plan process, frustrations with planning decisions in the Central Valley are being felt. The chair of Moraun Commissioners says residents in Crosby are sorely disappointed over the building of a new estate in the heart of the village. Work on 28 new homes and a retail unit is currently taking place on land at Balaglonia Farm by developer JM Project Management. Alison Lynch is the chair of the board. She says despite failing to successfully appeal against the development, the commissioners have managed to ensure certain important conditions will be met. She explained the history of this estate to me.
As you probably know, this started back in 2015 with a planning application for 28 houses and a retail unit in the village of Crosby on what was farmland. If we fast forward 4 years later, we now have houses on site, still unoccupied. I do believe that they have all been sold. There is still a lot of houses to be built. I think at the moment there's around about 11 built. Again, we took it to appeal because the last planning application that went through, which I believe was an amended application, some of the planning conditions which had been agreed in a previous application were missed off that one, which was the whole reason why we took it to appeal. You know, we have to live with the fact that we have the houses now. We lost the initial planning appeal, as did residents off Moraine. I think it was the first time in history where so many people within the parish had objected to the development, and they let everybody in the parish, they let their objections stand. So for us, the important thing for this appeal was to get the planning conditions back in. The developers did believe that we were just trying to waste time, but we weren't.
So tell us about those conditions. You've accepted that this is going ahead. What's important to ensure there's in this development?
The most important thing for the people of Moraine and the people of Crosby, and indeed the people who are going to be living on the development, was a pedestrian crossing. In the last application, that was missed off, despite it being on the one before that. So, you know, that was the most important, that the Puffin Crossing was in situ and operational before anybody moved into any property.
Were there any other considerations as well as the Puffin Crossing?
Yeah, there were. The retail unit has to be two units, not one unit. If it was one unit, it would need a retail impact assessment. So it has to remain as two units. The retail unit cannot have advertising boards outside. It can't sell any produce outside.
So why is that important?
I think probably to keep the character of the village as much as we possibly can, which is difficult given, you know, what's happened. I'm sure everybody is well aware of my feelings towards the development. And the commissioners, we speak for the people of the parish.
How do the board and the people feel now?
Probably those moving into the development are pleased it's gone ahead. There'll be people moving into the development who already live in the parish, but I would say that the majority of Moraine residents are sorely disappointed with what's happened. And of course we're worried again with what will happen with what comes out of the Eastern Area Plan, because of course there is the development creep as well. And some of the land above this current development is at first strategic reserve.
Do you fear this development could lead to the unlocking of adjacent rural sites because it's now in place?
Definitely. And, you know, the planners need to think carefully before allowing development on greenfield sites. Concentrate on brownfield. I know it's been said by RMHKs, but Douglas is becoming like a ghost town. You know, offices and companies are moving out of Douglas Town Centre, and there's a lot of empty buildings in Douglas.
How do the commissioners and the Board of Commissioners feel about the planning process? Because like you've mentioned, you'd objected, you'd asked for conditions, they weren't met, you'd had to do that again. The site has been going ahead anyway. How do you feel about the process now, looking back?
The process needs tweaking. That's probably a polite way to say it. You know, of course, we had the... They took away some people's rights to object to it if they didn't live within, I think it was 20 metres of the boundary of the site. You know, they suddenly thrust that upon people.
Do you think that was a deliberate result of what was going on with this development and the amount of people who were objecting?
I would like to say no, you know, that I completely trust our government and what goes on there, but it does make you think twice about why they suddenly introduced it and didn't do it from a certain date, and everything before that certain date was stood as it was.
Is that the end of this now? You've got those conditions in place.
It's the end of this one. We'll see what comes out of the Eastern Area Plan. I'm hoping that the Highways report will be sympathetic towards the Central Valley, because of course we get a lot of traffic from the west of the island, from Kirkmichael, from Peel, it all feeds through Crosby into Douglas. I do have some figures from some traffic counts that were done in September.
Yeah, let's have a look at those.
In 1 week, the total number of vehicles travelling through Crosby, and these strips were put down at Kissix Lane, virtually opposite the site, was nearly 64,000. And off that number of vehicles, average of 80%, were speeding.
How big of a concern is that on so many levels? I suppose safety.
Absolutely massive. You know, which is why I know I keep harping on about the pedestrian crossing, but those figures speak for themselves, and that's why it was so important to us.
Will that pedestrian crossing act as a sort of traffic control measure as well as being a safe place for residents to cross?
I'm hoping so, because, you know, human nature tells you that if you're driving and you're coming up to a set of lights, even if they're on green, there's a chance that they could change. So I'm hoping that people will take their foot off the pedal and slow down.
Were you satisfied with Highways' assessment of this development?
No, not at all. I don't believe that they used the right measures to come about their figures. I was confident from the start that it wouldn't go ahead because of a decision by Highways, and it has. How wrong can one be?
There is a potential benefit, I suppose, there'll be more rates for the board.
There will, but, you know, we manage our rates very well at the moment. We have a good reserve for any situation that should arise. You know, we had to employ somebody recently as a consultant for the Eastern Area Plan. It didn't cost us thousands, but it could have done. So, you know, we manage our rates well, very well now. It's not all about money for us. You know, it's about keeping Crosby as a village. People live in Moraine and Crosby because they want to live in a rural area.
Well, is that battle lost?
It is for this development. I just hope that, you know, we can maybe slow down or stop future development on greenfield sites. Don't spoil our villages. And I'm not just talking about Moraine, there's other villages as well. Of course, we've got the Western Area Plan, which is coming to fruition now. We don't want to see St John's or Patrick or anywhere like that spoiled on the greenfield sites.
Alison Lynch, the Chair of Moraine Commissioners. You're listening to Agenda on Manx Radio. Debates on whether taking gas from the island's seabed would involve fracking are a distraction from the real issue, at least according to the Manx Labour Party. Green Issues coordinator Joni Farragher says regardless of the technique used, government should not pursue projects in the fossil fuel industry given the climate emergency. It comes after last week local company Kroger, which is surveying a gas find 8 to 10 miles off Mackled Head, denied that fracking would be used to produce any reserves. The fossil fuel is expected to flow naturally from the conventional sandstone reservoir a mile beneath the seabed, according to Kroger. But Mrs. Farragher sees things differently. She spoke to me.
So since I've written that statement, I did read Kroger's press release, which they released either yesterday or the day before, so after I'd written that statement. So what I was basing my statement upon was previous government reports on how they would envisage the process of extraction, which was hydraulic fracturing. The deposits that have been found in the Irish Sea are known to be tight gas deposits, which would require hydraulic fracturing to release them. It could potentially be that Kroger have found that they're not tight gas deposits. If that's the case, I think that they could do with letting us know.
Reading from their press release here, it says the reservoir rocks containing the gas do not require fracking and nor would consent be granted to do so. Does that not sort of alleviate some of the concern about the extraction process? The fact that they're saying consent wouldn't even be granted to do fracking or at least the term in its sort of more sinister context?
Sure. I mean, as I've said in my piece, I think that the what I'm going to call the extraction distraction is making fools of us all, really. The issue is extraction of fossil gas. It's not about the method of extraction.
So it's not about concerns that there might be earthquakes or the sort of thing you see associated with the onshore fracking operations that were happening in the UK. It's more about the climate emergency. Is that correct?
Yeah, absolutely. If the method of extraction was to be hydraulic fracturing, that would concern me greatly. But in the first instance, extracting fossil fuels and pursuing fossil fuel extraction industry is not what we want to be doing in the situation that we're in right now. And that's my issue with this project.
Well, what about the argument that it could be used as a transition fuel to reorientate the Manx economy towards a lower carbon one?
Yeah, so we've heard that argument quite a lot. I think that argument would have maybe held a little bit more weight 50 years ago. At this point, having just declared a climate emergency and the situation that the world is in, mass extinctions, warming of our oceans, shrinking ice sheets, extreme weather events, and carbon dioxide levels at an all-time high in human history. These are, by the way, signs listed by NASA of the unequivocal nature of our climate system's warming. That situation that we're in right there mandates urgent action. We don't want to be another country and another generation that knows about the science but refuses to act upon it.
Those behind this project are promising great wealth for the island. Why should people listen to those saying that this should be left in the ground? Would this not be of a benefit?
I guess there's two ways to answer that. I think that most people would agree that if we're going to pursue a project that makes us money, it would need to be a project that we all felt was morally acceptable to us, which the fossil fuel industry is no longer morally acceptable. But secondly, the other side of this coin is that we have huge potential in renewable energy over here. And also we have a huge mandate from the government's own climate mitigation consultation to pursue projects that bring us renewable energy. That's the way that we could be making our money, and that's the way that we could be using our resources and our creativity and bequeathing a better world to our children and grandchildren at the same time.
Is the technology there in terms of renewable energy, and is the will there? I mean, this Kroger operation seems to be well advanced. They're going to be going out to doing surveys of this field. Nothing like that in the renewable sector at the moment on the Isle of Man.
Not on the Isle of Man, but we have people who are willing to come over here and give us their expertise. But what's more, in terms of public will, in looking at the climate mitigation consultation, the results of that, 92% of respondents supported community renewable energy, 86% supported installation of renewables, 95% support for grants and loans to invest in energy efficiency, and 80%, an outstanding 80% supported onshore wind generation in the Isle of Man. So I think that the mandate is there, if nothing else. And we also do have good technology for solar and wind power now, both onshore and offshore. Admittedly, tidal power is something that needs to be worked on. We don't need to invest in that right now. We can look at the ones that are upcoming industries. And I really do think that, I mean, it's fact now that renewable energy is outstripping the fossil fuel industry.
Well, you've mentioned the public will in that consultation. What do you think about the political will? Because we have seen consultations for all kinds of issues where the public say one thing and then government move in a different direction.
Yeah, and that's why we're really hoping to get our thoughts across to the government that the public actually aren't on board with fossil fuel extraction. The public are on board with renewable energy projects that will help us to bequeath a more sustainable world to our children and grandchildren.
So what's the Manx Labour Party doing in terms of moving us towards that renewable energy direction?
So actually at our AGM earlier this year, we discussed passing the motion to adopt as policy a radical Green New Deal. Now, Green New Deal is a UK-based group, and that has been mooted since 2007, actually. But I think it's just more relevant than ever now. Really, what it looks to is tackling the climate crisis at the same time as addressing economic insecurity. So it would be looking to upskill existing workers in old industries, such as the fossil fuel industry, meaning that they can then go into work in more renewable industry areas.
Green Issues Coordinator for the Manx Labour Party, Joni Farragher. And finally, it's all change in Maloo, with three new commissioners elected earlier this year, one of which has now become chairman, with changes to rates, the Dandara development and bypass and other issues affecting the parish. I went down to Ballasalla to speak to the new authority chair, Nigel Baisley. We started our chat by discussing Minister Thomas's plan for rates modernisation.
Any rating system, you're always going to get some losers, some winners, going to get unhappy people. From what I've had explained to me, I think it's probably a reasonably fair system. I mean,
is it worth the change, though? I guess that's the question
It has to change. If you think about it, like the problem is with properties. These older properties, they were valued back in whenever. So we charge whatever percentage rate against that. So if your property, even though it might be worth £800,000, is only valued at £300,000, you're paying rates less. I mean, I'll admit myself, I live in a big house up here, you know, and I'm paying £700 rates, which, you know, I'm lucky. But we went looking at a house because we were thinking of downsizing, and it was a bungalow, and they're paying £1,100 rates, still in Maloo. So you tell me where that's fair. And I know And nobody wants to pay more, but there has to be a fairness. And I accept that when they come to do the area plan, and one of the things I will say to people is, when they issue this initial assessment, you have to appeal, because like the area, the square footage is based on a normal wall. So a lot of these houses have very, very big, thick walls. So that takes up the living space. So there is a right of appeal, and people should take that up.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, square footage is better than rateable value, because unless you're revaluing a house every 2 years, which, given the flexibility of the market, you know, it's up and down, A, that costs money, and B, you'll never get a true value. Whereas it's on square footage, you know that's not going to change unless it's an extension.
But how do you account for the fact that different areas in the island, the properties are at different values, for example?
Yeah, well, that's the whole point, isn't it? If you go to a different area, if somebody wants to live in an area and is willing to pay it, that's it. But it doesn't necessarily follow that... There's a sort of perverse logic in this, because people want to live in areas that are nice, quiet, whatever, and they'll pay more for a house to go and live there. But the facilities or the refuge or whatever else may not be as good as, say, Maloo. But that doesn't mean that the commissioners there don't have overheads because they got trapped. There's all sorts of variable factors in there. But if we do on square footage, it doesn't matter what the value of the house is, then the local commissioners can set it against the square footage. I think it is a fairer system than the current one we've got.
Do you think it'll benefit Maloo?
I think a lot
to say.
Well, I think it'll benefit Maloo, yeah. But I also think, myself amongst them, we're going to be paying more. A lot of people. But the people in the sort of more modern houses may actually come off better. But it's like anything, there's always losers and there's always winners. And the other thing that one has to bear in mind, all the square footage is a baseline for the calculation. The rates are actually set by the local commissioners. So if we set a rate of £1 in the pound, that's what we pay. But, you know, Castletown might set £3. So you might, even though it's gone to square, it's not the square footage plan that's caused your rates to increase. It's the actual commissioners charge.
Commissioners.
One has to remember that. You know?
And it doesn't take it, obviously, water and sewage were the biggest chunk of that, of course. Something more specific now. Tell us about being elected chairman.
It was quite surprising. I mean, we had discussed, the three of us, when we were elected, what, you know, because Barry wrote us an email about what was opposition wise and that, and the other two very generously said I could be the chairman. The one thing that, jokingly, I've found is the amount of functions one has to attend. It's just like, you know, I think I've got a bigger diary than the Queen at the moment. It's just ridiculous. But I try to get to everything we can. You know, that's the position the chairman is, and it's a sort of social responsibility. You know, you have to be there. It's not particularly about voting, but if people are kind enough to ask you to a function, then you should go. That's what it's about, you know.
Do you think you have the experience? Because some might say three new members, one of them's just become the chairman. That's an inexperienced board, albeit for a short time.
Well, as regards boards, I've been in business since 1997. I have enough limited company boards. I know what is and what isn't allowed. I mean, okay, there's slight variance in the way government work, but it's pretty much the same. So from that point of view, I mean, Tim, who's our other, he's been on boards, he's in business. We're not naive, you know. It's not as if we've just come out of school and don't know what's going on.
I asked that question because it's a time of great change in terms of rates and potentially local authorities later on. So the need for a strong advocate from Maloo is probably stronger than it has been.
It is, you know. I mean, the rates thing, I mean, we've had a few people already tackle us. In fact, one young lady almost grabbed me off the street going down. Our responsibility is to attend the meetings with the rates, find out what's going on, and convert that to what people can understand. Politicians can go on about this, that, and the other. And there's a lot of pluses with that rates thing. You know, the irony is now at the moment, you're almost encouraged, if you have to, let it fall into rack and ruin. Because if it falls into rack and ruin and you can't live in it, you don't pay rates. Well, where's the justice in that? And also it makes the eyesore for the people who live around it. So, but under the new system, that you'll still pay rates and you'll pay a penalty if you haven't done it. So hopefully that will encourage people to do up houses, not leave them to rack and ruin, which I think is a big issue.
So would you say to ratepayers in Maloo that they're in safe hands at the moment?
I will do my utmost. I mean, as I say, I'm quite willing to talk to anybody. People can, you know, the whole thing is that the three of us, as you know, Tim's shop's just around the corner, Sanya is over the road, we're around, we can talk. And we will convey anything that we hear and convert, because everybody understands what's going on. And the biggest problem with this island, it's the sort of irony of it. It's a lovely island because everybody knows everybody, but there's also massive rumour mills. And there's a lot of misinformation out there. And what our job is to try and stop that misinformation and stop people panicking. I mean, even when the rates, if the new rate system comes in, because obviously the MHKs have still got to debate it, but if it comes in, it's not going to be day zero, bang. There's a transition period now. Initially, they were talking, I think, 3 to 5 years. Now they're talking the possibility of 10 years. So people will have a chance to adjust financially or move or whatever they want to do. But we need to communicate that to people, because a lot of mature people who are in housing and that, they're worrying that they don't want to move now. You know, they think they've got 10 years to live. And if they're panicking over it, we need to calm them down and tell them, if necessary, we need to fight their corner. You know, it's the more vulnerable people in life that... particularly we have to fight their corner. And there was a lot of questions asked at the school to the minister about various scenarios, and you can't just dismiss them. And I think that's where politicians got to be careful, because I know it's very easy when you're a politician to become surrounded by advisors, but you're getting what they think, you're not really getting what the people think. And a lot of people don't actually complain till they're really furious and then it's too late, you've lost the corner.
It's been a tumultuous time for Malou board in terms of the membership. It's changed a lot. Do you think that there'll be stability in the years to come, perhaps after the election next year?
Well, I hope so. I really do. We need whoever takes over, I hope if I'm not there, and Tanya, whoever takes over has got the same vigour, and the same interest. I think a lot of it now is about vigour, and because we've got, as you say, we've got some tumultuous times coming up, and we need to make sure that we're on the table when they're negotiating things, when they're setting the rules and plans. This goes back to the whole, I keep saying to people about the bypass, people keep objecting, but the time to object to that was back in 2005, not now. So we as Malou commissioners need to make sure that we're there now while the rates are being set, and that making sure that we get our opinion in for the benefit of the people of Malou.
The new chairman of Malou Commissioners, Nigel Baisley. That's all from this programme. We'll be back with more from Agenda soon, and you can listen again to this episode online via the Manx Radio website, as a podcast, and through Spotify. But for now, Gurumayu, and goodbye.